So I am here with Ethan the Turbo Lover. Hello again, good sir.
Hello.
Oh man.
About ready to turbo everybody's brains out.
Yeah, dude. Oh man, first of all, I gotta say, even though it's over Skype, it was good seeing you when you came up here to visit. Just like old times.
That was fun.
We did a little bit of karaoke and just hung out and shot the shit and chilled up here in the mountains. It was pretty cool.
Yes, it was.
Oh, man. So, since getting back to New York, what's been new for you, good buddy?
Nothing, really. The new album's all coming out and stuff. But other than that, nothing, really.
Yeah, now you see, as much as I love my show and I dedicate it to metal, you, I gotta admit, you hear about everything way faster than I do for some reason. And I think that's because you always got your ear to the ground.
Yeah, Iron Maiden a week before everybody. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, you see, you're that guy. I'm not. usually I wait till the release date, or sometimes if I get lucky and they forward me something ahead of time, then I get it and all that good stuff. But for the most part, so you got you're going to review some of the bigger name bands that we both know and love, and I'll kind of just give my two cents in when I can, but for the most part, I'll leave the album reviews up to you as far as the major bands that we listen to. But,
I definitely want to get your take on Disturbed, that's for sure.
Okay, absolutely. But first things first, let's start with some current metal news. What do you think about Van Halen going on tour again with David Lee Roth?
Gonna end in somebody's death.
I think it's a bad idea, man.
I was reading, you told me about that, and I was reading the Wikipedia on their history.
Mm-hmm.
Between 2003 and now, they've toured with Hagar, David Lee Roth, broke up with David Lee Roth, toured with him again, and now they're touring with him again.
Oh, man. It's like they're going through makeup breakup shit again. It's pretty annoying.
It's like that girlfriend that you know is bad for you,
uh-huh.
And you still end up getting with her anyway.
Yeah, everything about her just screams bad idea, but you do it anyway.
Yep.
Yeah, that's kind of where we're at with this. And I gotta be honest, I'm over Van Halen. As good as they were in all their incarnations,
There are some bands that put out new music after they get back together, and it just isn't right, and they're one of them.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
You listen to all their old stuff, and it's like, yeah, Van Halen, rock on. But then you listen to their new stuff, and you're like, Van Halen, stop it.
Oh, like their last album that they did with David Lee Roth, it was pure shit. Everybody hated it.
And, you know, that brings me into one of my points that I definitely want to emphasize here. You know, with these bands coming out with new albums like Maiden and Disturbed and everything like that.
Right.
You're never going to have an album like the old stuff.
Right.
You're never going to have another 2 Minutes to Midnight, you know, or in Disturbed's case, you're never going to have another Down with the Sickness. And when bands come out with new albums, people really need to lower their expectations and not expect a Trooper 2 or, you know, or Stupefy 2 or something like that, you know? And I get sick and tired of hearing people when these albums coming out going, oh, this sucks because it's not, you know, Metallica, for example. Oh, this sucks because it's not Master of Puppets. We're past the Master of Puppets stage, buddy.
Yeah, we are. We are very past that.
And that's why I think I like new albums a lot more than a lot of people do, because I'm not going in there expecting Master of Puppets is pulling your strings again! You know, like... I'm not, you know, going in there expecting that, and...
it's like when Metallica fans are like, I want another Kill 'Em All. It's like, Mustaine is not going to take time out of his busy schedule to write another Kill 'Em All for them, okay?
Right? The first thing I hate is when, oh, this album sucks because it's not Ride the Lightning. I should have known it was going to be not Ride the Lightning when they announced it. You know, these guys are 45. They're not angry and young anymore.
Oh, man. So, overall, you know, you can tweet us your feedback, email me questions at theflashcastshow@gmail.com on your thoughts about Van Halen, but we're going to pretty much drop the hammer on them and say, it's a bad idea, it sucks, let's move on.
They need to kill them all.
No, they don't. They're not killing it at all.
Not like that, not like that, you know. They need to kill them all the tours.
Oh, man.
Stop.
And let's see, latest studio update from Megadeth, actually. If you sign up and go to pledgemusic.com, I guess Dave Mustaine and pledge.com got together and they're doing a bunch of different prizes and giveaways. If you sign up, you, not only do you get the album early, but then if you pay a certain price, you can get a digital download plus a signed copy of the album. And then it goes all the way up to, if you pay $1,000, you get a digital copy of the album, you get a autographed copy of the album, and then you get a free 2-day guitar lesson with Dave Mustaine. So, I mean...
This is how you play Tornado of Souls. Oh, God.
Right. So, I mean, Pledge Music, I looked at, like... I hope they start doing this for a lot of other bands, too, because it was a good idea. But then if you sign up, you actually get,
Diamond
like...
Diamond did that for their new album.
They did?
Yeah. That's why
sweet.
I can't find it.
Oh, wow. But Pledge Music is kind of... I like it. It's a good concept, but... Then,
yeah, like pre-ordering for video games.
Yeah, pre-ordering, and then you get, like, some package, and then you get some extra DLC.
Or in this case, a guitar lesson with Dave Mustaine.
Oh, yeah, I know. I love it, but at the same time, I'm not going to pay $1,000 for the album. Sorry, I'm just not. As much as I love Megadeth, I mean, I would pay... Well, I mean, if I get, like, the guitar lesson, great. But you know me, I would just be sitting there the whole time in awe. I wouldn't learn shit, and I know it.
All right, you gonna copy that scale now? I just saw your fingers move so magically.
Yeah, it's kind of like Jason Molotov and Bill Goldberg, you know? Nobody's a bigger Dave Mustaine mark than me.
If they asked you to be his butt double, you'd do it.
I would do it. They'd be like, how did Dave Mustaine get so tan all of a sudden? I don't know, man. And his ass shrunk, too. Oh, boy. Oh, man. So, what do you got going on your end right now?
As far as what, music news?
Oh, yeah. Any music news?
I don't really have anything because all... Let's see. I'm looking it up right now. I don't think I really have anything because I think all my bands have already released their shit, you know?
Oh, really?
And Metallica, well, they've waiting for the hell to freeze over before they release their new album, so...
Well, okay, you know what? Let's talk about that real quick. How frustrating is it being a Metallica fan?
Well, considering the fact that Death Magnetic came out in 08, and since then I've gotten 3 Disturbed albums after they went on hiatus, mind you. I've gotten 2 Iron Maiden albums. I've gotten... 1 Judas Priest album.
Okay.
I've gotten... Domin's managed to put out an album plus Fall to Face the Earth only to come back and bring out a new album. And Metallica is just now writing a new album.
Wait, weren't they supposed to be writing an album years ago? Didn't they say that they were writing this album, like, years
they're
ago?
They're in the studio right now arranging everything, supposedly.
I bet Lars is slowing everything down.
Probably. I could see it. I don't like that, James. Do it again.
This is how I'm going to hit the fucking drum next time, okay? When I hit that fucking drum like that, that's when you start your rhythm. But only after I hit the fucking drum. And no, I'm not turning the snare down to zero again.
Breaking Benjamin's put out an album in 09, and then they went through legal process and still came out with a new album before fucking Metallica.
Wait, what? Legal process? What happened with Benjamin there?
When he had his medical crap going on, two of the former guys in the band started remixing songs without his permission, so he took him to court for the name of Breaking Benjamin. And he was able to win and put out a new album before Metallica's even written a new album.
Oh, so did he replace those two guys, or are they still the same guys? Because that's got to be very uncomfortable. But yeah, are they still...
He replaced the whole band. The whole band's different.
That's why this album felt really, really different.
Yeah, the whole band's different.
Huh. Very nice. You know, see, because it's kind of weird, I mean, because Well, I mean, for example, like, I remember when The Killers put out their album a few years ago and they did the song Mr. Brightside, the drummer ended up suing them for the rights, saying that he was the one who wrote the song, and then I guess the dude won in court, and the lead singer won in court, but he still kept him in the band. David Elfson tried to sue Dave Mustaine for legal rights of all the Megadeth material and lost. And then years later, Dave Mustaine puts him back in the band. But Benjamin just takes the easy route out and just eradicates everybody and gets a whole new band. I like it.
Right?
I like it. I'm on board.
No, being a Metallica fan, it definitely frustrates me.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I'm a little eased on it, though, because they said next year the album's going to come out. So if I go through all 2016, don't have a new album in my hands, then we're going to have problems.
Ethan, I got to break it to you, bro. They said earlier 2 years – they said that same exact statement 2 years ago.
I know.
I hate to break it to you, buddy. Oh,
well,
man.
When it comes out of Lars's mouth, though, you got to take it with something at least.
Okay. I'll give you that one there, but, okay, so, I'll be honest, I'll be very curious about Metallica. I want to hear what they got to say, so hopefully they come out with something next year. but in the meantime, right. what do you think of the replacement fill-in substitute lineup of the new Megadeth?
It might have some aggression to it.
Oh, dude, the snippets I've heard are insane. Like, Chris Adler from Lamb of God on the drums, that was pretty interesting. The drums definitely feel very different for this album. And then that new guitarist, I still don't know his last name, but I know his first name is Kiko. And Kiko there is is insanely talented. Have you seen this guy play guitar?
I think I've seen a couple of clips.
Oh, geez, man. Look him up on YouTube. He's a fucking beast on the guitar, dude. Although, again, Dave Mustaine goes out and tweets out that, you know, Kiko is the best guitarist that they've ever had. It's like, oh, you said that about Chris Broderick, too. So, you know, not doubting that the dude is talented. But, you know, obviously, you know me, I'm jonesing in my pants for Megadeth 15. How do you feel about it?
I can't wait for it. Hopefully it's not Super Collider Part 2.
Hey, man, hey. Super Collider was a lot better than Risk, but yeah, you're right. It still wasn't their best work, but, you know, it is what it was.
Dave trying to sing.
Yeah. But at least he can try and sing. It's not like some Alexi situation. Oh, speaking of Alexi, what do you think of the new tour lineup over in the UK? And they're probably going to come to the US. It's Lamb of God, Children of Bodom, Megadeth headlines. What do you think about Chris Adler pulling double duty?
Oh, yeah. That's going to be tough. That's going to be very tough.
Definitely will be tough, but
I don't think I could sit through the first two bands to get to Megadeth, though. I would be bored out of my mind to the point where Megadeth would get up there and be like, oh, great, here, you know?
Yeah, you know, now, Children of Bodom, we've seen both of these bands live on different occasions, but you and I both saw Children of Bodom live. They're not bad live. If they bring the right set list, I mean, obviously, they're going to kick ass live.
Right.
So, that's a show I think that is still going to be a must-see this summer, or whatever's remaining left of summer into early November.
Yeah, fall show, yeah.
Yep. All right. So, now moving on from Megadeth, I got to ask you. And I don't know what you've heard of them yet, but I gotta tell you, I've been listening to this band, and they've been killing it. What do you think of Chris Broderick and Sean Drover's new band, Act of Defiance?
I haven't listened to it yet.
You haven't listened to them yet?
No.
Oh, dude, man, they're killer. They are killer. They just, everything you would expect. Sean Drover really amped up and really showcased more of what he can do outside of the confines of Megadeth. I always knew he was a talented drummer, but he really shows it with Act of Defiance. And then, of course, Chris Broderick gets to open up on the lead guitar a lot more. And, of course, you know, he opens up just about every track with, like, a blistering intro solo.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, man, killer. But the band consists of, I believe they were made up from former members of Shadows Fall, and then Megadeth, and then I think Nevermore. I don't know. I'll have to get more of the info on them, but they're still very new right now. And they actually follow me on Twitter, and I follow Sean Drover, and he's always updating his Twitter with the progress of where the band is at. But, man, I gotta tell you, they're definitely one I recommend.
I'll look them up.
Absolutely. Oh, man. So let's get to some of the meat and potatoes of why we're here today. And
the meat and potatoes.
Yeah, the meat and potatoes. And let's do an album breakdown. And we'll start with the easy route. We'll go with Disturbed's brand new album. I got it on Amazon Prime for free because I'm an Amazon Prime member. Shameless plug.
Shameless plug.
But no, but I am an Amazon Prime member. I have been for about 3 years now. And the funny thing was, is I didn't even know I was for like the first year. But but yeah, like one of the awesome perks is you get some free music, and it the latest edition was the brand new Disturbed album. Downloaded it, and I gotta tell you, I really liked it, track by track.
It surprised me.
How did it surprise you? Like, what was the first thing? Like, what was your reaction? Like,
at times it feels like Disturbed, and at other times it doesn't.
Okay,
there's
now
a lot of stuff in,
you, when you
there's
say
a lot of stuff in there that I wouldn't expect them to do.
Okay.
You know, yeah, just little. Some of the songs a little bit heavier than normal too for them.
Oh yeah.
It just, I don't know, it feels like that break really did them, you know, good.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm not a big fan of hiatuses, but they do seem to play a big favor, you know, for bands, especially. I mean, because you're right,
right?
This album had a much different feel to it, like, it was still Disturbed, but at the same time, it was like, you're with Disturbed on this journey, and a lot of the songs, of course, felt very personal, again, because it kind of reminded me a little bit, it had a lot of the dark elements of Asylum to it, and, like, certain tracks, like, Save Our Last Goodbye, I mean, I listened to the album, I loved it, but then I asked myself that same question. How the fuck does David Draymond keep having bad shit happen to him all the time?
Right? Maybe his, like, growing up was just bad for him, and he's had, well, you know?
God, I mean, it's like, well, I mean, it's not bad to the point where it's like Aaron Lewis, where he's just bitching about it, like, because that was the thing that really just bugged me about Stained. Is when they just got so whiny to the point where it's like where...
He doesn't bitch about it. He tells you to rise above it and, like, kick the ass, you know?
Yeah, Aaron Lewis did none of that. He was just like, I'm depressed, please love me, run for the razor blades. I did not feel that at all, but I did notice after I listened to the album, I was in a bad mood for, like, a little bit. Like, I was literally in, like, a little bit of a darker, badder mood. Like, I was like... I was pretty pissed off after I listened to the album.
The first time I listened to it, the album made me feel that way too, but not about personal reasons, but about the world that we live in.
Yeah, that's exactly my view.
There's a few songs on there that make you open your eyes and look around at what's going on, like the Vengeful One, well, of course, the video, but then What Are You Waiting For?
Oh, yeah.
And Open Your Eyes, like, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So what you waiting for? Tell me what you waiting for. Don't stand... by and deny it, you know, like...
Oh, yeah, like, it just, it makes you look at life, and then you're just upset, because it's like, I almost had this feeling like, fuck, man, I'm better than this, you know? I was meant for more than this kind of feeling. Right. And I'm kind of pissed off at where I'm at in life, so, and that's kind of, that was the exact same feel that I had. Now the track Fire It Up made me laugh hilarious. That was a great track.
That's like Polly written all over it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that had Simple Life written all over it.
Fucking begin in there. Come on, do it.
I'm not afraid to have a good time. Oh, man. But, oh, man, but yeah, like I said, I got really angry, and then I wanted to hit something, but then, you know, it's like, you stop, and then you look at where you're at in life, and then it's just kind of like, I'm meant for more, but at the same time, it really made me appreciate the good things that I do have going on in my life right now, and not really look at the bad so much, so, each track, I would break it down, but then I got the bonus deluxe edition, which had a bunch of tracks.
I did too, but I didn't break those down because normal people, if they go to the store and buy the album, they're not going to get those three tracks. I mean, I can give my ratings of those three tracks, but I didn't include them in like the overall.
But yeah, what was your overall rating, and what were your favorite tracks from the album?
So what I did was I rated each song on a scale 1 to 10,
mm-hmm.
and then I added up what I rated them all, put it as a final total out of, in this case, 1 to 10. Then I divided it down, and I got my final album rating.
That's too much math for me.
It's not that hard, dude.
Well, I'm going to go with the simple star rating, but go ahead, give your breakdown, give your review.
So let's see. First track, I combined the intro and immortalized into one. I gave it an 8 out of 10, the first track. I felt good, you know, good start to the... Shut up. good start to the CD, like it just starts getting heavy, and I just loved it. Then I gave Vengeful one 9 out of 10, because that's like my second favorite song on the album. That's just... I don't know, I just really love that song. First night I heard it, I had listened to it like 4 times, I was like, this song's awesome. Open Your Eyes was a 7.5. That one's okay. I'll listen to it, but, you know, I'm not going to go out of my way and listen to it.
Right.
The Light, 8 out of 10. What Are You Waiting For was a 7.5. Your Mind was a 9 out of 10. Who, 8.5 out of 10. And then, Like You, Save Our Last Goodbye is my favorite song on the album. I give that a 9.5 out of 10. Fire It Up is 7.5 because even though I don't really, you know, the lyrics aren't me, I love the guitar in the song.
Oh, yeah, that a badass rhythm.
Yeah, Never Wrong was probably the weakest one on the album for me, and that's a 6 out of 10. And then I gave Who Taught You How to Hate a 9 out of 10, which gave me a 89.5 out of 110, which if you divide down my album ranking would be 8 out of 10 for that.
All right. Well, my ranking was a little bit different. I will say a overall favorite track on the album was definitely Save Our Last Goodbye. And then, believe it or not, one of my other ones was The Sound of Silence.
I didn't cover that because it was a cover, so I didn't rate it.
Which, that version of it was really, really good. So, I like that one. I mean, you know, as being a cover, it was just great. And then, of course, Your Mind was a good one. And
for being a techno song, yeah.
Yeah. And Never Wrong I really did like as well. But actually, one of my favorite overall tracks next to Save Our Last Goodbye was sadly one of the bonus tracks, and that was Tyrant.
That one was okay. Out of the three tracks, bonus tracks, I thought that was the weakest out of the three, I thought.
Mm-hmm. It definitely didn't have as much oomph, but I thought the lyrics and everything else were really on point, so.
Yeah. I don't know, I guess I didn't really like the chorus too much, or how the chorus flowed anyway.
Right. Because, the chorus really didn't flow. That's what I loved.
Exactly.
But that's what that's what I loved about it. Oh, and The Brave and the Bold was good, too.
That's a good song, yep.
But, so overall, my rating out of 9 out of 10, I give that one about, I give it a good solid 8 on my scale, because it was everything I wanted from Disturbed, and it was really good. But I think what kind of downgraded it a little bit was, and this is saying this with an open mind, I liked the brand new changes, but it was definitely a lot different than anything they've ever done. So the fact that they were just going in a lot bigger, newer direction, I think that's what kind of took away from it being a solid 10 or 9 or higher. But I give it a good solid 8. It was really good.
I do too. It's the rating was, it was above what I was expecting. I was expecting to give this maybe a 7 when I first heard it announced.
Really? Why was
because
that?
Because looking at, you know, what they came out with before, Asylum, looking when it first came out, was a good album. Looking at it in hindsight now, going back and listening to it, it's an okay album.
It wasn't Indestructible.
No, I actually think Indestructible is probably...
their best work?
The best, yep. Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
I would think. It was just a perfect mix of their older stuff and their, you know, and at their time, newer stuff. At the time, now, you know, it's... But...
Okay, and now... Let's talk about one of our favorite artists, Blaze Bailey.
No.
No. Yeah, no. Absolutely not.
Is he still alive? No, kidding.
No. Okay. Oh, which brings me to one of my awesome worst news in metal, worst ideas in metal. Get this. They are built...
Blaze Bailey headlined the band?
Unlike this next idea I'm about to mention, I would go see Blaze Bailey live. And I would watch him perform a live metal version of all the old Iron Maiden hits done by him. Oh, well, listen to this. Listen to this. King Diamond is getting an amusement park dedicated in his honor. What do you think about that?
If, as long as it's not based off his singing abilities, I could see why, because he does have theatrics.
He's got the theatrics and the staying power, but it is basically, it is still a big tribute, and like a lot of the rides and stuff are going to be after his songs, and I want to know how you really sit about this, because I want to go off on a fucking rant about this.
If I don't have to hear him sing on any of the thing, I'm okay with it. Because, you know, theatrics as far as, like, concerts is concerned, that's a big thing.
Yeah.
But that's also because look at some of the bands that I like, you know. Look at Iron Maiden. Bruce comes out in different attires half the time at a show, you know.
Okay.
If I, like, got, like, flaming skulls at his music park, I'm okay with that. Now, if I have to be on a ride and also I hear go, Hachoo-hoo! Yeah, no, I'm gonna probably, yeah, no.
Well, they're gonna play his music.
Okay, yeah, then no, I hate that idea.
But I hate the fucking idea in general. You know how I feel about King Diamond. I can't do it.
Right.
Can't do it, man. Can't. I'm totally against it.
I would go to Iron Maiden themed Blaze Bailey Park before I go to that.
Now, you see, you can actually do something with that. What the fuck are they going to do with King Diamond?
I'm going to go on a ride called Man on the Edge.
I'm sorry to all you metal fans that do like King Diamond. You know, he's done a couple good tracks here and there. I don't like his music. I think he fucking blows.
One of the very good tracks he's done is not even his track.
It was with Volbeat.
Yeah, I was about to say, it was with Volbeat.
Yeah, it was with Volbeat. And I will say this, he's always had talented musicians work for him. He's found some amazing people. His vocals just suck, dude. I don't like King Diamond at all. Can't do it. I mean, and this isn't one of those situations where I'm kind of on the fence, like Slayer. You know, I'm not exactly the biggest Slayer fan, but I appreciate what they've done for metal. I appreciate their staying power in thrash metal. And I will still buy Slayer music. And I will still go see them live. Because sometimes you just gotta lash out and have Slayer. I have never sat down and go, God, you know what? I just feel like taking a shit and listening to King Diamond. Never. Never. It's never gonna happen. But yeah, no. So, theme park is right up there with Van Halen going back on a reunion tour with David Lee Roth. Bad idea. Oh, man. God.
I got you worked up.
I'm surprised I didn't lose my cool, man, but fuck King Diamond, man. I'm sorry. I can't do it. Fuck that guy. Oh, boy.
No.
Can't do it. Oh, man. So, Ethan, it's time for an awesome little segment called Attack and Defend.
Ah, here we go. I can't wait to see what you ask me.
Attack and defend! Attack for your life! See, I'm going to start singing intros now. No.
Okay.
Okay. But attack and defend, how this is going to work, is I'm going to take something that you love in the world of metal, and I'm going to attack it for very good reasons, and you have to defend it if you can. And what I have chosen...
Like Bailey, we're going to fail miserably.
It's just going to turn into a rape party, pretty much, of just attacking his career.
It's going to be like Batista and the Rape Child.
Oh, Blaze Bailey, we're going to attack and defend. No, let's just attack Blaze Bailey. Yeah, no. Man, nothing personal against the guy, but yeah, we all know where we stand on Blaze Bailey.
If you go and listen to the two Iron Maiden albums he did with them, you'll know why we hate him so much.
Oh, man. All right. So, I am going to attack your favorite band's album. Yes, I am attacking Saint Anger.
I fucking knew it.
I hope you were ready. Okay,
that's kind of funny because I already have the album. I'm gonna have you attack.
Well, here we go. I'm gonna jump in on this and I'm gonna give you my views and then here we go. But all right. So first of all,
actually, surprisingly enough, I probably could defend this album. That's
all right. Well, let's defend it if you can. First of all. Biggest complaint on the fucking album that I have. Kirk Hammett had no solos on it. And it really just, it was a very slow moving album. And then it was like some of the worst fucking work I've ever heard from Metallica. Aside from a couple tracks on there. And also, what the fuck was Lars thinking when he turned the snare drum down to zero? If anybody actually thinks that that was a good fucking sound to have in a song, especially if your name was Metallica, that was terrible. And, you know, Saint Anger has been a skid mark on the metal community. And let's be honest, this was also came at a time when Metallica's career before then was not doing so hot. And then they follow it up with that pile of crap. And everywhere I go, and every time I see certain Metallica fans, now I will say you're the exception in my eyes, but when I hear somebody go, "Oh, Metallica fucking rules, man, Saint Anger was great," I want to fucking punch them because that album was shit. Okay,
maybe that's because I'm actually smart about my music.
Man, but I absolutely fucking hated it, aside from the tracks Frantic, Saint Anger, and Dirty Window. But still.
Please tell me you're joking.
Oh, but if I see Metallica live, I do not want to hear the tracks Saint Anger, Dirty Window, or Frantic. That's my take on this. So I am attacking Metallica's legacy and where they sit in the metal community because of that album. Can you defend?
Okay, well, first of all, I'm going to say Saint Anger is a necessary evil.
Oh, this I got to fucking hear.
You can't, at that time, it was two options. Either get a Metallica album then, or wait till God knows when to get another Metallica album, which in this case was 2008. At the time, the mindset they were in, that was the album you were going to get regardless of whatever happened. The mindset they were in, that was the album you were going to get. A band has to hit the bottom of the barrel in order to only go up, and I don't think you would have got Death Magnetic if you didn't have Saint Anger. In order to go up, you need to get utter crap. And that's what you got with Saint Anger, was almost utter crap.
Yeah, it was pure shit, Ethan.
Yeah. You have to. The no solos thing, if you go back and listen to every song, there was really no place for any solos to fit in almost any of those songs. I can't figure out a place to put. In Dirty Window, there was no way you're going to have a solo in that song. They did. They just. The way they wrote the songs. Okay, I'll admit some of the songs are way too long. Invisible Kid just feels like it's the same thing over and over and over and over again. But if they shortened down like that song or something, you can't throw a solo in there. I can't defend Lars on the drums. Lars is just stupid sometimes. But it's just, yeah, it's a necessary evil. It was the only way you were going to be able to get Bob Rock out, because if the album was well-received, the band would be like, oh, yay, Bob Rock, let's keep going. And obviously, out of the four albums that they did with Bob Rock, you can say that one of them was good.
Yes.
And we all know which one that was, which was the Black Album.
Yep.
But
well, actually, let's touch on that section of Metallica's career a little bit. Load, I thought it had some good tracks, but I thought it was shit. Reload was actually pretty decent, but that's when you could kind of tell Metallica was slipping a little bit.
If you take off the name Metallica, I think those albums are a lot better than what people think they are.
Okay.
If you gave me the album and didn't tell me what band it was, and I didn't know, like, if I didn't know how James sang, and I didn't know that that was a Metallica album, it would be a good album, because okay. I wouldn't know the name. As soon as you slap a name on it, like I said earlier, the expectations go really high.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, you take off the name, you take out the familiarity with the voice, and you don't know what band that is, and the albums all of a sudden become good. You slap on Metallica, and all of a sudden the album is compared to, you know, you get dumb-witted fans that start comparing the album to Master of Puppets, and you think that a bunch of 35-year-olds are still, you know, 23 and pissed off because they're not getting laid all the time,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Okay.
And when they wrote, I would agree with you, out of the two, Reload's probably the better one out of the two.
Mm-hmm.
I do like both, but that's yeah. also because when I listen to them, I don't compare them to Master of Puppets or Ride Lightning. I compare it as a separate album in its own, you know? And at that time, that album on its own, I think they're both really good, and I listen to them. Do I listen to the whole thing? No, there are tracks on both those albums I absolutely hate. But
okay.
There are also a couple of tracks on both albums that I like. I like King Nothing. I like Ain't My Bitch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like, I'm probably one of the very few, I like The Unforgiven 2.
Hey, you know what? I actually did like that one. Unforgiven 2 was pretty good.
I like Fuel, despite the fact that it's pretty kind of overplayed, but I do like Fuel. But on their own, they're good.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of other stuff here.
Okay, let's move back to Saint Anger, though. You got to go to Saint Anger.
I think Saint Anger is okay.
Mm-hmm.
Would I give it to somebody to listen to Metallica? No. So, fun fact, Saint Anger was actually the song that got me into metal, which is weird.
That's really weird. Like, talking to you now, it's very... That's strange.
I think if you didn't have the slow down parts in the song, it would be a really good metal song. If it was just fast the whole time.
Okay.
But the fact that it slows down, but I just don't think Metallica where they would be now if they didn't have Saint Anger.
Okay.
I would feel like if they never had Saint Anger, they've continued trying to get scrape by with stuff. We would probably have more albums if they didn't have Saint Anger by them. But I feel like with how bad Saint Anger did and the fact that they don't even acknowledge it in set lists makes it reason why we have to wait so long for a Metallica album. But I also feel like they're putting more effort into it now, into albums now, because of Saint Anger.
Okay.
When you watch like the behind-the-scenes footage of them writing the songs on Saint Anger, it was also another thing, too. It was the first time the whole band was in the writing process.
Before,
it was just James and Lars writing all the songs. And Death Magnetic was the same way. James and Lars wrote all the songs. James did all the lyrics, and him and Lars wrote all the instruments, with Kirk Hammett you know, every once in a while doing a song. But if you look on Metallica's writing credits on Saint Anger, there's not one song that's just James and Lars. It's everybody.
Hate me now!
Yeah. Well, in the documentary, Life is Pain, Death is Pain. Yeah, that's total Kirk Hammett right there.
My lifestyle determines my death style.
And also, too, James was just getting sober, so he exactly wasn't thinking right at the time.
Okay. All right. So overall, let's kind of – I don't mean to really cut you off, but, you know, time constraints here. But I will say, as far as Attack and Defend, I think you did a good job at defending that album and its place in metal. So I'm going to give you one last final question on that, on this topic. What is – Saint Anger's place in metal, and why is it going to keep its place in metal, and what is its positive effect?
Well, its positive effect is obviously the fact that the band's now trying. But it's also the album where metal bands are going to compare their stuff to, because if somebody says Saint Anger's better, you know your album's shit.
Okay.
But
all right.
If you had to rank it in a whole, I would stick it right in the middle of the pack of all metal albums, because it's not the worst metal album possibly out there.
No.
I've heard King stuff worse.
We just got done talking about King Diamond, so I think it's pretty safe to say that if my options were you're either going to live, die, you will live if you listen to Saint Anger all the way through, or you will die, but you can save yourself by listening to King Diamond. I'm going to listen to Saint Anger.
So that's where I think it would be. It's just, it's right in the middle of the pack. It's like,
okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome sauce. So now, Mr. Turbo Lover, it's your turn. Attack and Defend on me. Take your best shot at any one of my favorite bands. Oh, by the way, what we do on here is you could take shots at albums, a song, a power ballad, a guitarist, or something that the band has done that was stupid on stage during a live performance. But what do you got for me?
I'm going to go with an easy one here.
Okay.
It's kind of weird that I'm asking you to defend this one, because I actually like four of the songs on the album.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to have you defend Risk.
Oh, I fucking knew it.
I couldn't think of anything else. That just popped. But I do, I like the first three tracks, and then, surprisingly enough, I actually like I'll Be There For You.
Oh, yeah.
I like the first three tracks and that track on the album. I like, when I say the first three tracks, I mean Insomnia, the remix, or whatever.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I don't like the original version. I like the remix version.
Yep.
But overall, it's their weakest out of them all. And I'm not even a big Megadeth fan, if I'm telling you that, you know?
Okay, but what did you hate about the album?
All the experimentation. Granted, experimentation's really... It veered really far away from what Megadeth should be.
Okay.
It just wasn't metal enough, I guess. It wasn't Megadeth.
All right, so let me defend it there. Obviously... Oh, man, you actually somewhat picked a little bit of a tough one, because of the simple fact that it says Megadeth, but it's not a metal thrash album. So that's what's hard. But I will say, I will defend the album Risk because of this.
You love Megadeth.
Well, I love Megadeth, but now I gotta logically defend it and intelligently defend it. I will say, let's start with why Risk became the Risk. And this wasn't like, oh, Dave Mustaine was on drugs. He didn't know what he was doing. No, he knew full well what he was doing. He made the decisions. But I will also say, it comes back to the Metallica Saint Anger situation. There was a producer behind the album named Bud Prager at the time. And the last album that he helped produce for Megadeth was Cryptic Writings. And we all remember Cryptic Writings was the first one that got him a lot of mainstream success. It had the songs Trust, Almost Honest, A Secret Place, and Vortex, and just a bunch of killer radio-friendly songs. And also, I look at the lineup at the time. The lineup was pretty bad. You had Marty Friedman, and then you had a brand new drummer in Jimmy DeGrazio, who was taking over for Nick Menza at the time. And then you had Dave Mustaine, David Ellefson. But Dave's mindset was he wanted success, obviously still fueled by the Metallica situation. He wanted their success too. So he was saying, he made the conscious decision that yes, more radio-friendly songs would work. And he took the advice of his producer, and he went in that direction, and paid for it. Because Risk was not the worst album, but the reason why I'm going to sit here and defend it is because you still got some cool tracks, like Prince of Darkness was a great track.
Right.
But also, Megadeth, in my eyes, was the first band to actually step outside of the thrash metal genre and really show that, yes, they can be capable of writing other music. And it showed that your name could still be Megadeth and you could still put out something. Yes, you would take a backlash from the metal community, but it actually turned some heads in the mainstream. And so that was very impressive to me. So the fact that they could branch out and do other things, like the song Crush 'Em. Hey, that was Bill Goldberg's theme in WCW. It was on the Universal...
Crush 'Em.
And it was on the Universal Soldier soundtrack, which had Van Damme and Bill Goldberg. So, I mean, for the sake of that, that was cool. And Megadeth actually performed Crush 'Em live on WCW Nitro. Because it was Goldberg's theme. And of course, you know, like I said, it showed a nice humbler side, but also Dave Mustaine was trying to also keep a band together that didn't want to be together at the time. And Marty Friedman, he actually did that and shifted the direction of the album to kind of cater to Marty Friedman's other music taste and interests. And he did it for him, but he also did it knowing that it was a mistake. But I think the biggest downfall of the Risk and why I defend it is because the lyrics were still really good. The songs were still really good. It just should not have said Megadeth. So that is my argument in case, and its place in metal. I mean, Len, let's look at the after effect. Megadeth only got stronger after that. It's like you said. Right. They had one bad album. Not all their work has been great. But, I mean, Super Collider was kind of it was balanced. It wasn't my favorite album. But, I mean, like, look at the tracks we had after that. We had The World Needs a Hero. You had songs like A Thousand Times Goodbye. And then you had The System Has Failed. And then you had United Abominations, and the first track you had on there was Sleepwalker. It definitely forced Dave Mustaine to look at himself and get pissed off. So I definitely think Risk is frowned upon. It's laughed at, but I personally think it still holds a place in metal of what can happen to a band, but also how much stronger you can come back from it. So it is kind of the Metallica effect, because they both kind of had that effect around the same time.
Yeah.
Or actually, no, Megadeth hit bottom first, yeah.
I was about to say, Slayer was about...
2004.
It was 4 years later, yep.
Okay, so then in my argument... okay, so you could say Megadeth experienced first before what Metallica just started to experience with Saint Anger.
Yeah, Megadeth was experiencing it right when Metallica started having the problems with Jason.
Yep. And inner band problems, and so... But I will defend Risk to the very end, because I still bought the damn album.
Right? I still bought Saint Anger.
So, that is my argument, and suck it, internet.
Suck it. Yeah, you just heard his defense saying anger and risk. How does that fucking make you feel, internet? We took a risk with that saying anger.
Oh, and it's funny that you mentioned this, and that was the topic, because today marks the 16th anniversary of Risk.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I know, I feel old.
God.
Oh, man. You know what, Ethan? You know what else I like to do, like, when I take a break from heavy thrash metal?
What?
I listen to a power ballad.
Oh, Jesus.
That's right. Hey, I'm actually giving you a reason to talk, because this section of the show is called Remember the Glam!
Remember the Glam? God.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because I was actually listening to a few tracks, and I was on my Amazon Prime, and I was just cycling tracks, and a good old glam track popped up from a band called Motley Crue. And the track was Too Young to Fall in Love. So, we are going to take a moment to remember
Motley
the Crue's glam.
Motley Crue actually celebrating their 15th anniversary of Dr. Feelgood yesterday, so.
Wow, what timing that was. I didn't even know that was going on. But they're on their final farewell tour right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, holy again. Crap. Yeah. So, in remembering the glam, what is your take, and what was your favorite, what was the first glam metal or power ballad that got you hooked into glam for a moment, even for just a second? What did it have effect on you, and do you still like that song to this very day?
Actually, it wasn't a song that got me on glam metal.
Oh, God.
My mom took me in 2006 to go see Poison and Cinderella in concert.
Oh, God.
And that is actually what... It was actually a really good concert. I got to see a lot of boobs, too, so I mean...
Well, okay, obviously we know glam metal and power ballads can lead to sex, okay? We get that.
But, it was actually that concert that got me into glam metal, and, I don't really know what the first ballad was that I heard from glam metal. I would have to say... I think it would be Don't Know What You Got Till It's Gone by Cinderella.
Oh, fuck. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, God. You know, I get it. I do. I get it. I don't like it, but I get it.
I think that would... I don't know. I'm not... I can't really remember, like, the first glam metal band that I got into, because I like quite a few.
Okay. Well, aside from glam metal, do you think glam metal has evolved into anything today? Has it died out?
Papa Roach.
Okay. Well, okay. What is its place in metal, and what effect... why does it deserve a place in metal? Glam metal.
Does deserve a place in metal, because even though it was kind of short-lived in the 80s, mm-hmm. it was the 80s. That's when you really think about it.
Right.
A lot of the style back in the 80s was the big hair and stuff like that, and glam metal was all big hair and leather and, you know, and of course girls. Who doesn't like girls? I mean, come on.
Uh-huh. Understandable.
And there's not a lot of bands that have show hints of glam metal nowadays. But nowadays Papa Roach, I'm not going to say old Papa Roach, because old Papa Roach did not have any hints of it. But if you look at Papa Roach nowadays and how they dress and stuff, there's a lot of hints to glam metal in them. And some of their songs, there's hints to glam metal in them too. So I think you still have some bands like them that have the hints of glam metal. And there's always going to be the little spark of life for glam metal here and there. But I read an article the other day, or I saw an article, I didn't really read it. It said glam metal is making a comeback. I do not believe that, because I don't really see any glam... I don't see any glam metal bands. You know,
unless you count Steel Panther, but they're more of a joke and parody.
Steel Panther, but I don't listen to Steel Panther because they're more of a joke band. But any genre of metal deserves a place in metal, because no matter how long it lasts, it's still, it's going to have an impact on somebody or something, you know? And again, remember, glam metal, Dave Mustaine said it, it's gay LA metal.
Gay LA music, and yep.
It even had an effect on Dave Mustaine because he didn't want to be like that. So it does deserve a place in metal, you know?
So, okay, so you think it just, so its overall influence, like, don't get me wrong, there's some good songs and I respect what it did for the genre and how it kind of opened up. Because who knows, you might have said like, oh, well, I didn't know that Whitesnake did that song. And then you look at Whitesnake, right. So like, it opens up eyes.
When we went and saw Whitesnake with Judas Priest, man, they were kind of heavy.
They were. Also, I think they're like, well, we're on tour with Judas Priest. We better bring some heavy shit if we're not.
Right, they were actually pretty good.
Like, they were actually really good.
And there are days when I'm in a glam metal mood and I want to listen to some glam metal, but...
Okay, so when you kick back, relax, and you want to listen to a glam metal track, what do you go for? What hits the ear?
iPod here.
What hits the ear of the turbo lover? By the way, ladies, his number is 970-40.
My parents had a big influence in me with glam metal. That's probably why I say sure. Cinderella a lot. But
Cinderella, not.
When I listen to glam metal, I listen to dirty songs. That's the thing.
Okay.
Like Talk Dirty to Me or yep. Shake Me by Cinderella. Or,
okay.
You know, I Almost Told You That I Love You by Papa Roach because that's totally a glam metal song.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see. I'm going through my iPod here. Really much the only ones I could think of off the top of my head. I had one on my top of my head and it just kind of ran out of my fucking brain. It was like, yeah, no, bye, see you later.
Oh, man.
But yes, songs like those, you know, when I listen to glam metal, that's generally what I kick back and listen to. Or Too Young to Fall in Love by Motley Crue, you know?
Yeah, that's one of my favorites.
Or, you know, Kickstart My Heart by them, too.
Oh, kind of Kickstart My Heart. I forgot about that one. That is a damn good track, I won't lie. And it's, for being a glam metal track, it is surprisingly pretty heavy. So, I give you that one.
That would be the closest one to leaning towards not being glam metal, but it still is.
Yep. So, glam metal has a positive effect on metal. And, so as much as I'm still on board with, you know, not listening to glam metal, it has its effects and it has its moments, so... For nostalgic purposes, I give it its credit and its due. Oh, boy.
We also got to think, too, if you look at me and you, I focus more on the singing than you do in bands.
Very true. Very, very true.
Look at a lot of Flash Flanagan bands like Static X or Megadeth or something. Those guys, they don't sing. Whereas if you hear my bands I talk about, they all sing.
Yep. That's true. So. Yep. But yep, we have mine are very...
spectrum covered, so it's all good.
Oh, man. But some acknowledgments I want to move on to real quick of the Flashcast show. Some local bands that have been killing it here in Colorado, in Denver base. Definitely got to give a shout out to my boys Jailcat. They sent me their album before it was released, and I got to tell you, man, it's pretty killer. Some pretty decent solos, they also give away links to their live YouTube shows. They are a killer band to see live, it looks like. And you can actually look them up on YouTube. Just type in Jailcat Band, and you will find their YouTube
metal
channel.
Or what?
Yeah, they are. They're metal, but they got some nice little elements there of some alternative mixed in as well. They can hammer it down on guitar, and the vocals are pretty decent, so... Everything kind of flows. They sent me their album early before its release date, and I gotta tell you, I enjoyed it. I'm glad I got it, and I highly recommend it. It should be coming out here very, very soon. I'm just checking my email account because that's where I kept all the info. But Jailcat's first EP is also available on Dropbox.com. And you can go to their official website as well. And you can give them a follow on Twitter at JailCatBand. On the Twitter. And they are a fresh face in the metal world. Like I said, their website is still under construction, but their YouTube channel is alive and well, and so is their Twitter. So give them a follow. And check them out. Let's see. And they're also available on SoundCloud. You can even find some of their tracks that they've posted up on SoundCloud. As everybody knows, I love SoundCloud, and that's actually where this show will also be streaming from as well, is on SoundCloud, and available on iTunes as well, and Podomatic.com. So, JailCat, highly recommend them. Let's see, who else is killing it in the local scene? Oh, God, I gotta tell you, communicating with these guys online has been a treat. But I definitely gotta say, Core Zero has been very interesting band following here. I think they're, here's what I personally see from Core Zero, is they are a super band in a weak metal local scene. They should be touring with bigger bands right now, in my personal opinion. So, they're kind of on the same track as a Nonpoint. Kind of same era. They're very aggressive, very hardcore, metal as hell, but I love their vocals, powerful rhythm guitar, intricate solos when needed be. I can't say more good things about Core Zero, and I hope they go on tour soon. So check them out, give them a follow @Core Zero Band. And CoreZero.com and Core Zero Band YouTube channel. So give those guys a follow as well. Check them out on YouTube. So those are the two bands that have been killing it on the local scene here in Colorado. Anything, any waves happening out there in New York, Ethan?
I haven't found any local bands yet, but...
Really?
Out here... Yeah, out here there's... I know from people that kind of play, sort of, and okay. Bars and stuff like that, that don't really want to get big, but there are a lot of metal bands, so I'm sure cool. I'll find something eventually.
Absolutely. Oh, man. Woo! Man, we covered a lot in this first hour together.
I know we did. That was a lot.
Oh, man, but now... We got more ground to cover and more interesting topics going on. So, let's see. Oh, yeah. In other metal news, I don't know if you heard about this, but I have a strong suspicion that Triple H is a metalhead. Yeah, we're going to dip into the world of pro wrestling a little bit here. And yeah, I said pro wrestling, Vince. Suck it. So, we're going to do a quick review of Monday Night Raw and the past events that have been going on in the WWE. But first, I gotta let you know, how does this hit the ear? There's a big metal festival, and some of the bands, just to name a few, are Rob Zombie, Motorhead... Volbeat, Children of Bodom, In This Moment, Nonpoint, and a bunch of others with special guest NXT live performance shows. Who do you think set that up?
I would have to say it was the Game.
Well, good, because he fucking tweeted it out.
Anything that involves NXT has got The Game written all over it.
But also this show.
You think would be smart enough to do all that, you douche?
I guess this is a 3-day event because there's like over 20 something big name metal bands, all metal by the way, and NXT is going to be there performing as well. And Triple H put it on his own Twitter, and I guess this is taking place in October, closer to Halloween. It's going to be like the 25th through the 31st, I think. So there's a lot of bands there, but, oh, Mushroomhead is there too. Rock on.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so, what are your thoughts on Triple H being a metalhead?
I could see it with how much anger he has all the time.
You know, you actually know his favorite band is Metallica?
Is it really? I thought it'd be Motorhead.
Oh, it's not. A lot of people think it's Motorhead, but it's actually not. No, he was on the Chris Jericho podcast, and he was talking about his favorite metal bands, and he had to say his favorite band is Metallica, which was kind of a shocker to me. I thought it was Motorhead too, but it's actually Metallica.
Watch everybody get their egos destroyed when he's like, "My favorite album is Saint Anger."
I'd be like, "You fucking suck, man." Oh, no. But anyway. But yeah, I mean, what do you think about this? I mean, this could not... Aren't you a little bit sad that we're going to miss this event? Because this is like everything that is like our world combined into one. If you threw special guest Marvel Comics, it would be done right there. But you have wrestling and heavy metal.
Thanos watching the whole thing in a big chair, we'd be set.
Yeah, he'd be next to Triple H, because Triple H would have to have his own throne, be like, look at the event I put together.
And I even got Thanos here.
I am one of you. I like Metallica.
Give me the Infinity Gauntlet.
Okay, I have just come to the conclusion while mimicking Triple H's voice, he is just a much more angry James Hetfield. I am the game. My favorite band is Metallica. I use a hammer.
Exit lights. Enter night.
Oh, man. But let's touch on this subject here for a moment. There's always been a close communication between metalheads and wrestling. What's the connection, man? What do you think it is?
The adrenaline.
The adrenaline rush?
Yeah. Do a highlight video of a wrestling match and then throw fucking some pussy shit over it, it doesn't fit.
Oh, what? You mean you don't want to take Phil Collins' In the Air Tonight and put it over a Brock Lesnar highlight reel?
I can feel it as he's suplexing people and shit now.
Okay, you know what? That actually might be funny, so now I challenge the fans. Somebody should make a video of that. But anyway, well, I mean, like, look at some of the. Going from Jim Johnston to seeing how bands have interacted over the years. I mean, we've had Rob Zombie do Edge's theme. Disturbed did the remix version of Stone Cold Steve Austin's theme, which I absolutely loved. And then you had Motorhead stepping in and doing Triple H's theme. So, obviously, there's an awesome connection and a good relationship. Oh, and Saliva did Batista's theme and the Dudley Boys' theme. Yeah, so, I mean...
Well, even that new band that is doing some of the themes, they have, like, a
CFOs.
Hard rock... Yeah. Like, all their stuff has a lot of hard rock feel to it, you know?
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. I love the... I mean, because... I'm sorry, but, you know, and don't get me wrong, there's other genres that work for characters, but every time I envision a character, and I do, like, the 2K15 create a wrestler... Or, well, not 2K15, well, unless you play it on the Xbox 360, because then you actually get to use your own theme music. I'm always doing, like, a metal track to my guy, because I want him to just capture the energy of the crowd, and then when he hits the finisher, but it's all about that entrance now. And I gotta be honest, I love the directions that the entrance themes play, but I just think that they all look better with metal music. I mean... Triple H's entrance a couple years back when he came out to freaking From Whom the Bell Tolls. Come on.
Uh-huh, yeah.
It worked. So, I mean, the relationship between wrestling and metal, I mean, it's a close one. People don't always see it, but it's there. Which is why I talk wrestling on this podcast, too. So, having said that, what have been some of your favorite theme tracks that the CFOs have done as of lately for some of the wrestlers that have a metal feel to them?
I like Kevin Owens and Seth Rollins.
Yes. Now, what did you think of Finn Balor's?
I like it. It fits his character.
Absolutely. But yeah, like now, Seth but Rollins.
Nothing says walking into Lowe's like having fucking Seth Rollins' theme blasted in your ears and walking through the fucking doors.
You know, I won't lie. When I hear his theme, I feel like I should have a briefcase. And I now want my own statue made.
I just want to curb stomp someone.
Yeah, I'm not going to say the pedigree because, let's be honest, that's not real. Anyway.
Yeah.
So, doing a quick brief recap of what happened on Raw, some of the high points for me was, I got to be honest, one of the events that happened on Raw, well, first of all, Bo Dallas coming out. As much as I love seeing that guy, that was a bad idea, but it was awesome entertainment for me. Because I love it every time I get to see Brock Lesnar throw around somebody who's lighter than water to him. Just throw him around the ring a bunch of times. That was entertaining. But I got to ask you, what do you think of Braun Strowman or Beef Stroganoff? Or as I like to call him, his name should have been Big Billy Wyatt.
Big Billy Wyatt.
Yeah, Big Billy Wyatt. The black sheep of the family. Because he's bigger than both Luke Harper and Bray Wyatt. What were your thoughts on his debut?
I liked it. He fits the Wyatt family really well.
Yeah, just, you know, he's got the beard, big, strong, scary guy. A vicious maneuver in that, it is literally a lifting arm triangle choke.
He looks like, I feel like with the Wyatt family, with the how, like, first of all, they're called the Wyatt family and how they look, they're like, they should be straight out of a horror movie. And with him, I feel like if I was in a cabin and he was in he would be in like the dark corner of the room ready to kill me.
Like Devil's Rejects, kinda.
Yeah.
Yeah, they kinda got that feel to it. Now, I gotta ask you, the main reason they brought in Braun Strowman was because Eric Rowan was injured.
Yeah.
So, when he heals up, do you think he has a place in the Wyatt family, or do you think he's going to get kicked to the curb?
It depends on what their plans are. I could see them having another person team up with Reigns and Ambrose. Mm-hmm. Do they have two people, though? That's the question.
That's true. I mean, now, because here's the thing, is my personal take on this. I don't know what the payoff is or where they're going with the story, but this would probably, if they didn't screw it up and water it down, this would have been a perfect time for Seth Rollins to go on a hiatus and then come back as a member and resurrect the Shield. Because then you could do an expanded new Wyatt family versus a Shield, the original Shield. But then I would say you'd have to find a third member as well.
Yeah.
Or a fourth member. Excuse me, my apologies.
I think Seth Rollins is going to be turning face soon.
Yeah, I kind of see that coming too. Oh, yeah. And
I don't know when, because I thought he was going to lose the title for sure at SummerSlam. And then actually, I originally thought it was going to be Battleground, and then he didn't lose it there. So I thought SummerSlam was going to be the next time he didn't lose it there, and I don't see him losing it at Night of Champions. So I don't know when he's going to lose it. And the scary thought part is, the only other person after Sting that he has left to fight is Triple H.
I got to be honest, if that's the direction they're going, I'm on board.
He hasn't lost the title yet. I'm scared that Triple H is going to be like, my ego needs me to get the title.
I need to get one more time. He'll find a way to, like, tie John Cena and Ric Flair's record in one night. At Night of Champions, Triple H comes back and wins all the belts.
I don't think Seth Rollins is going to beat Cena, but I definitely think he'll beat Sting.
Okay, so you see that. Here's the thing. That's what's kind of up in the air.
I mean, they have such a perfect opportunity to have Seth Rollins beat both at Night of Champions and really become a dominant wrestler champion, but they're not going to do it with Cena. They're just they have the Cena's cock shoved so far down their fucking throat that every time Cena loses, he has to get the win back and then some.
Okay, and now we'll kind of...
The only person they haven't done that yet with is Brock, and I'm afraid eventually they're going to do that with him too.
Okay, and bringing up the points that New Age Insiders brought up about, you know, they're always very valid and always on their game, and they always give good insight, but here's what I offer to that equation. Like, the whole Jon Stewart finish thing with Seth Rollins, I get it as a heel standpoint. From a heel standpoint, nothing is too shameful for you. Nothing right. is too shameful. But here's my other take on it. Is with the involvement, and I don't want to say this to be a John Cena basher or hater. I actually respect the guy a lot. I'm tired of his character, but I enjoyed the Open Challenge United States champion John Cena. Some of it has to do with his input of where his character goes and what his character does. Because you're not going to sit there and tell me he's 100% to the core. Oh, well, you know, whatever you guys think. No, he's some of him has to sit there and say, I don't want to lose like this. I don't want to lose like that to this guy. I have to look good. At least, or if I am going to lose, then I have to look good somehow. Like, I do think he puts in his input like that.
John Cena has a 76% winning percentage.
That's too high, man.
Way too high. There's only two other people that have it.
Who are they?
And one of them was Ultimate Warrior. I can't remember the other one.
Okay.
That's too high, though. That's pretty much every match he loses, he always wins two times.
Yeah.
And we saw that with Kevin Owens.
And here's the thing. Now you got to ask yourself, how do you want to establish Seth Rollins? If you want to give him his biggest... Well, I'm the fighting champion moment. He has to beat John Cena clean for the U.S. title. And then he beats Sting clean for the World Heavyweight title. Because if you have him win both victories clean, that just more than opens up the window of I'm better than Triple H.
How he beats Cena is going to really define how the company looks at him as a champion.
That's true. That is so true.
How he performs at Night of Champions will determine how they look at him. If he loses both matches, then they don't see him as a future project. Or Vince doesn't anyway. We all know Triple H probably does. But
oh, yeah.
If he loses both matches, Vince doesn't see him as a champion or the future, which until Vince passes control over Triple H, we could see Seth Rollins be on the mid-card. But if he wins against Sting and loses to Cena, then it's kind of 50-50, but if he wins both matches, and I don't care how he wins, if he wins one dominant and one DQ or whatever.
Okay, so if he goes like hook and crook against Cena, but then beats Sting clean?
Yes. Then I could see them, they're behind him. But the key to it is Cena.
That's true. How is that match going to end?
Since the Cena match is going to be before the Sting, you can kind of tell how the Sting match is going to end by the finish of the Cena match. They're not going to let Seth Rollins walk out with just the United States title. So if he wins the Cena match crooked or clean, you know he's going to win the other match.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
It's too much of a fall in one night for him to go from World Heavyweight title to United States just champion.
Okay, understandable. And then, because it would be hard to put him over as a face... If you just have him lose too devastatingly in one night, because people want to see him fail really badly.
I think storyline should go, if you're setting up for Triple H and Seth Rollins,
to be better than Triple H.
He has to win both matches, come out of the pay-per-view cocky as ever, and start being so cocky to the point where Triple H is like, I'm the only person that could take him down, you know?
Right. But then
you have to figure out who the face and heel is, and Triple H is not going to be the face in that feud.
Yeah, I see him still playing. So then do you think it's going to be another, well, or, yeah, let's say, so do you think they're going to probably try and play off of Triple H's jealousy? Or, like, right away, or do you think they're going to prolong it?
there's nobody else for Seth Rollins to face after Night of Champions that would prolong the Triple H jealousy thing anymore. Sting is seriously like the top of the chain, pretty much. Unless they had him do something with Ric Flair and he beats the crap out of Ric Flair or something.
You know? Right. Or then you can have Ric Flair show up and congratulate Seth Rollins.
I can see Seth Rollins being like, I'm so good, I could beat Triple H in a match, and that's how it starts.
Oh, yeah.
Which he would do. But again, how are you going to make it so Seth Rollins is the face and Triple H is the heel? Because Triple H ain't going to be the face.
Yeah, well, because Triple H loves playing the heel.
But it just doesn't work with the fact that he's in the authority.
That's true. So you got to find... Or is this the moment where Triple H screws Seth Rollins on Night of Champions? Let's say he's because what if he's about to beat Sting and Triple H just can't let it happen because he doesn't want anybody else to own a victory over Sting except for him. And then Sting takes the title away from Seth Rollins.
But again, I don't see WWE doing two part-time champions 2 years in a row.
Well, you see, with Sting, it's a little bit different. It all depends on what his contract is, too.
That's true. There's the other thing, too. Sting said in his promo he's never been WWE champion. That's what...
Mm-hmm.
And he wouldn't mention that unless he was going to get the title. And I can see Vince giving him the title just to make sure he has, like, you know... So he has that accomplishment.
Absolutely. And he doesn't need to hold the title for long. Sting?
No, he doesn't.
I mean,
he could hold it to Royal Rumble. That's
well, because here's my take on it.
Royal Rumble also sets up a storyline for WrestleMania. If he loses the title at Royal Rumble, that person that becomes champion still has plenty of time to do a storyline with somebody else.
Exactly. And here's the thing. There is value in a part-timer nowadays in WWE. Because Brock showed that last year. They could have done some things better, but for the most part, it was an overall success because... And now, people look at part-timers as bad news.
Well, remember there's before a yin and Brock yang. Brock got the title, everybody was pissed that they were planning on doing that, and then after he got the title, and about a month into it, people liked it?
Oh, yeah. Because then when he showed up, it was like, ah, you knew some shit was going to go down.
It made the title worth something.
Exactly. So Brock Lesnar's title reign was awesome. And, having part-time champions and part-timers in general do help. It's all about how you utilize the part-timers. Like, let's be honest, there is value in Sting being World Heavyweight Champion. As much as... because don't get me wrong, as a lot of awesome young talent as there is on that roster... And I get it. Unless you pull the trigger, you don't always know. But there is value in letting Sting just run with the belt for even a little bit. Because then you get value in the title. But then you go back to not seeing it all the time. But also, it has opened up different dimensions. Because Brock Lesnar, with part of the deal, with re-signing his deal with WWE... has agreed to work more house shows. So here's the way I look at it.
Right, he's got that one in October that he's working.
Yep, and what are they doing? They're putting those shows on the network now. So now you get to watch a house show on the network, which is cool. It opens up a lot of opportunities, but at the same time, if Brock Lesnar is going to be working a house show, Sting can be World Heavyweight Champion because there's value there. So I like it.
I do too. I like the part-time champion thing. I like it too.
Oh man. So overall, were your thoughts good? I mean, the Dudley Boys returning, how cool was that?
They let them use some tables. I'm okay with that.
Hey, and the Dudley Boys returning did some good. The Ascension got a fucking match on SmackDown.
If they were going to put anybody with the Wyatt family, it should have been those two, honestly.
Oh, or they, now...
They could have used Bray Wyatt.
Oh, yeah. That could have been amazing. to see a big stable.
That's right. I still like the Ascension, regardless of the fact that they're total jobbers.
Oh, I know. I love them, too. Because you can actually do something with them. But you just... they don't. That's the only problem. You
should send them back down to NXT. Get some more work.
I think they
I mean, look at Bray Wyatt. I mean, he used to be Husky Harris, and then he got sent back down. Now he came back, and look at him.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. So... I think we got our thoughts moving forward on wrestling. So now, let's go back to the metal world. What are some of the albums you are excited for that are up and coming from your favorite bands?
I was just thinking about that the other day. I think I'm good for the year.
Oh no, because there's more coming up.
I have no idea what they are.
Well, I am actually stoked for the new Five Finger Death Punch album.
Oh, yeah, see, I can't get excited about them because I'm starting to feel like all their songs sound the same almost.
Kind of, yes. I do get it.
I listened to them the other day and I was like, all these songs almost sound the same.
But I'm still kind of excited because I like the new single, Jekyll and Hyde. Sounded really good.
I like the end when he's like, what?
Oh, man, but, so that's one I'm pretty stoked for. And, Children of Bodom is working on a new album. And, from what I heard, it sounds nothing like what they've been putting out, which hasn't been all that great. So, there's a lot of promise there. And, man... aside from Megadeth 15, that's the one I'm really jacked for. Can't wait. I'm like chomping at the bit for that one. But now I gotta hear. What are your thoughts on the upcoming Iron Maiden album?
Well, I can't really give my thoughts since I've already heard it.
Well, you've already heard it.
Let me just say, I'm pretty impressed right now. That's all I'll say, because I have to yet to give my actual review on it, so...
Really? You're kind of torn on this one, because you could give us a review right now. If you wanted, but...
It's long, that's the problem. I've only listened to it like 3 times since I've had it.
Only 3 times? Okay. Yeah. All right.
You know how long it took me quite a few times to get listened to Disturbed before I could actually, like, jot down each number for each song.
Okay.
Because you always have... you gotta break it down in stages. The first time you listen to it, you you don't get a chance to digest everything. The second time is when you go through and you start picking out songs that stick out to you, and then after that is usually when you get the songs that you really like and don't like.
Okay, fair enough.
Because when I listen to Seated the first time and second time, it sounds totally different.
All right.
But on the next show, I will have the Iron Maiden review.
All right, so. The next one we will have
Let
the
me
Iron
just say,
Maiden
though,
review.
I will say the 18-minute-long song I've been complaining about for the past God knows how many months, it actually might be my favorite track on the CD.
Okay. Cool.
So,
all right. Well, let's move on to a very quick segment before we get out of here, onto our final segment. And I like to call this one Battle of the Axemen. That's right. We're going to take... the best guitarist, lead or rhythm, but we're going to take one from the past, a current veteran, and match him up with a new gunslinger today and see how they match up. All right. Okay. So, but because, Ethan, you are up to date with a lot of these new guys, I will let you pick the new gunslinger and I will pick the veteran to match him. And then we debated out on who is better or if they cancel each other out and then why. So pick any one of your awesome guitarists that you know of, lead or rhythm, and I will try and match the Axemen.
All right, then.
Or Or you know what? I'm just going to change that. I'm going to flat out tell you who I think is better and why. But okay. Then you got to tell me who you think is better.
Well, most of the time it's probably going to be the veteran because the veteran has more time involved, really. Usually.
Not always. Not always. Because
well, not always, but most of the time it probably will be.
Yep. Oh, and you can even pick. You can pick a dead. You can pick dead or alive.
Oh man, see, this is tough because a lot of the new guitars nowadays just don't hold a candle to the old people.
Okay, well then you pick your veteran and I'll pick mine. Doesn't matter.
My veteran. Okay.
Just pick any gunslinger. Go for it. Pick an Axeman.
Dave Murray from Iron Maiden.
Oh, excellent choice. Lead or rhythm guitar, and then why?
Oh, Dave Murray's a total lead.
Okay, lead guitar. Ooh. Damn, you picked some good meat and potatoes there.
When you listen to all the solos on the albums, he's usually the one doing them. I mean, the guy's just amazing. I mean, and he thoroughly enjoys playing guitar. Whenever you see him up there, he's always got a smile on his face.
Oh, man.
Not to mention the dude can, like, spin around and stuff and play that guitar at the same time.
Okay. Okay.
And Iron Maiden catalog. I just can't say.
Okay, well, you know, you really put me in a bind there because I love Dave Murray.
Oh, I do.
For all the reasons. Yeah.
Ugh.
But I think I can beat him. And I'm going to have to dip deep into my talent pool for this one, but I think I can beat him. All right. And my guitarist? Gus G. from Fire and Wind.
Oh, I didn't think about him. Ooh, yeah.
And the reason why I'm going to pick Gus G. is because I believe, no disrespect to Dave Murray, but I believe Gus G can beat Dave Murray with his style of guitar plus his own.
Why?
Well, solo-wise, he's on point, and I'm not going to sit there and say the youth thing, okay? Because that's kind of a given. Let's take them both back in their prime.
Dave Murray plays like he's still in his youth, man, so you can't use it anyway.
Okay. Well, but then I will then go on point and say I do believe technically sound. I just think Gus G is a little more about the solo as to where Dave Murray's kind of at the point where he can just kind of play it in his sleep, which is very talented, but he's always played more within the contemporary styles of Iron Maiden as to where Gus G, even though he's been with Firewind, he's played with Ozzy, and then he's played on his solo experts as well, so I just think he's the best matchup for Dave Murray one-on-one in a guitar battle. So I gotta go Gus G.
I would have to agree with you on that one.
Oh, you agree with me on that one? Really?
Only because you said that he did venture out, and you got a point there. Like the whole Gus G's played with Ozzy and everything, and Dave Murray's really only... I don't think Dave Murray's played with anybody else.
I mean, he helped Bruce Dickinson on his solo album, but that's...
That was actually Adrian Smith.
Oh, that was Adrian Smith. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Adrian Smith's the one that played with Bruce and played in other bands. But I still think Dave Murray's more talented than Adrian Smith.
Okay, but yeah, so looks like I win that battle. Gus G, ladies and gentlemen, I think would... beat the brakes off of Dave Murray. And I hate saying that, too. It pains me. Because I love Iron Maiden. I love Dave Murray. He's an awesome guitarist.
Well, like I said, most of the time the veterans will win, but sometimes the new one, you know?
All right. So now, let's move on to the next key element in Battle of the Axes. Rhythm guitar.
You do yours first.
I'll do mine first. And let's go with pure rhythm guitar. I'm going to
pick... You doing new or old?
Who would you like me to pick? New or old?
I'll go either way. An old already picked.
You think you have an old?
Yeah.
All right. Let's go veteran versus veteran then. Rhythm guitar. Angus Young, AC/DC. Who do you got?
John Schaefer.
Fuck.
And I'm going to give you one reason why.
Go for
Travel
it.
Travel in Stygian life.
No, you don't even have to give me a reason. I fucking lost that one straight up.
Just listen to, from Days of, I think it was, no, it's their greatest hits, The Blessed and the Damned. Travel in Stygian live. Just listen to the bridge and how fast he plays that guitar.
Oh, man, I should have picked more of a challenge. Fucking Angus Young. Oh, man.
I can see why you picked Angus Young, because wasn't Dave Mustaine the one that said Angus was one of the top three best rhythm guitarists?
Of all time? Absolutely.
It was him, Mustaine, and Hetfield, he said. But I don't think at the time Mustaine knew who John Schaefer was.
I don't think anybody knew who John Schaefer was at that time. But yeah, sadly, and I won't say that sadly, because I like Angus Young, I like AC/DC, I like Iced Earth. So yes, I will agree with you. But it's just, damn, that took you like no time whatsoever.
Because
damn.
In my mind, I think John Schaefer is probably one of the best rhythm guitarists, if not the best, almost.
Oh, yeah, his rhythm guitar is just insane. All right, so you spanked me on that one. All right. And by the way,
it looks like an angry pirate.
All right. And now, let's take a moment to remember one of the worst bands of all time in metal. Oh, boy. Who do you got, Ethan? One of the worst bands you've ever heard that you just...
You already know who mine's gonna be.
Oh, well, say it.
So get your head out your ass now!
You're singing the song, but you're not telling me the name of the
Operator,
band.
Operator, man.
All right. Operator. Oh.
Soul Crusher.
Oh, man. You know what? I'll even let you... Just take this one. Tell these people why this band was so terrible.
Okay, people out in internet land, have you ever seen a dude when you're walking in the summer, walking down the street with a bandana on, and he's shirtless, and he has these blue jeans on and flip-flops? That's the lead singer of Operator, pretty much. Total douche, walks around pointing at people with his eyes wide open, just like, yeah, and then he sings so annoying, it's not even funny. He's like, quit wasting my time! I want it forever, so make up your mind.
Oh, man.
It sounds like Paul Bearer, but higher.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, this dude is jacked, by the way, and he's got, like, one of those small, like, little mohawk cuts. I like. Is the band still together?
I don't think so. And if you watch, like, the music video, oh, my God.
Yeah. If you want to see how bad this band is, just go to YouTube and type in Soul Crusher music video. That's it. You will see why we don't like this band. And the Soul Crusher music video is what did it for me. Like, ugh. Just terrible, terrible band. The song was just off, and the video was too over the top, and... Oh, yeah, it was not a good experience at all.
The guy's name is Johnny Strong, if you ever want to look it up.
Johnny Strong? He should be wrestling for WWE right now.
Don't tell him that. He might actually go do it.
And when I say wrestling, he should be jobbing for WWE right now. Feed him to Beef Stroganoff.
Oh, man. I had to, yeah, I definitely had to tell people about
it. Oh, jeez. Because you had the awesome privilege of seeing him live. I never did.
Such an awesome privilege. Ugh. That guy was horrible.
Tell us about it.
No, I don't want to tell you about it. I don't want to relive those memories.
That traumatizing, huh?
It was pretty traumatizing. To the point where it almost affected my Avenged Sevenfold status during that concert.
That's that.
Oh, man.
Oh, boy. So, moving on from Operator. You know, every now and then, I get the question from people on Twitter. They actually DM me on my Twitter, at the Flashcast Show. And one of the questions I get asked, when you're not listening to metal or watching wrestling, do you listen to any other podcast shows? And the answer is yes, I do. I listen to many shows. The most recent one that I gotta say that I listen to a lot is The Fighter and the Kid. Awesome show. You can find them on Stitcher, iTunes, and SoundCloud as well. But it consists of comedian and actor Brian Callen and current UFC heavyweight fighter Brendan Schaub. And I gotta tell you, these two actually make an awesome team for this podcast. So that's one show I absolutely love. They get great guests and they're both really funny. It's very entertaining. So yes, I listen to Fighter and the Kid. And of course, we both listen to the New Age Insiders.
Yes, we do. I actually just listened to our new one yesterday.
I haven't heard it yet, so I'm actually downloading
it.
I'm actually downloading it right now. But did you hear the one last week where they did their Bray Wyatt impressions?
I didn't know.
Oh, God. They just had a segment where they were going off talking like Bray Wyatt. Oh, it was hilarious. Gotta listen to it. Absolutely entertaining. Hilarious as hell. I subscribed to them on iTunes because I love their show. And I went back and re-downloaded everything that they got up on iTunes and Podomatic. So that's the one I've been loving. So that's what that's what I listen to. Are you listening to Dr. Dre?
She's listening to Dr. Dre.
Oh, I was about to say, I was like, dude, this is supposed to be metal, and you bring Dre and the Chronic in here? How dare you?
I don't listen to rap, so.
Oh, man. Although, I won't lie, there's some good stuff out there.
Yes, but that's not this show.
That'll be when we decide to do a hip-hop show.
When that one happens, don't let me know.
I'll just spring it on you one day. All right, so I got my Iron Maiden review ready. Oh, dude, no, man. I'm going to crank on Cottonmouth Kings, man. And I just start bumping ICP and all that good stuff.
Oh, man.
Oh, by the way, that is like a touch-in from aside from metal. Cottonmouth Kings put out like their, I don't know, 23rd or 26th album.
Do they not tour or what?
No, that's just it. They do tour. I don't think they've stopped touring since they graduated high school. I don't even know if they graduated high school. I don't know.
Jeez.
And I think they got a new album coming out next week. I don't know. But all I gotta tell you is when I saw that, I immediately asked myself, man, where the fuck did my life go? Because last time I remember Cottonmouth Kings, they were only on like their seventh album.
Oh, their seventh album?
Yes! And they have just kept going and going and going and going. The lineup has changed a little bit, some members have died. And now they're on, like, album number 20, I think. It's insane. Oh, that's back when I used to be a big stoner. Anyway.
Anyway.
Moving on to other topics within the metal genre. Let's move on to the final segment of the show. Are you ready for this one, Ethan?
Yes, I am ready.
I hope you did your stretches.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that's right. I hope you had a Verve. I hope you took Alpha Brain. I hope you did your DDP yoga. I hope you did all those things to prepare for this one, because this is it. This is the big one. Are you ready?
I'm ready, dude.
All right. Because I'm just going to ask you one more time. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right, because it is the Heavy Metal Showdown. That's right. It is the Throwdown, people. Final segment of the show. And this is where either Ethan and I are going to agree a disagree, agree to disagree, or we're going to kill each other. Or we're going to have to team up to fight off the masses of people we're about to piss off with this segment. Because it is the throwdown, and it is who we think on this edition is better. Or if we think, I don't know, you might side with me, you might not. But the band we're going to go up against today, and you might be excited for this one, so this might be easy for you, but I want you to tread carefully because of who this band is. But we are going to take on Slayer.
Jesus Christ.
All right. But we both.
Oh, my God. Really? Seriously?
We're taking on Slayer.
Okay.
And why are we taking on Slayer? Now, let's get this out there, Slayer fans. We both respect and listen to Slayer. Ethan, do you listen to Slayer?
I have a few songs I like from them, but overall, no, not really.
Okay. I'm not the biggest Slayer fan either, so I'm going to flat out say, in the genre of thrash, there are many bands that I think are better, but we're going to pick a doozer today. Are you ready, Ethan?
I am ready.
Ethan, who are you going to pick?
You're going to make me pick?
I'm going to make you pick. See, that's how this show works. And now I will either support you or I will sit there and go, you know what, I think Slayer's better. But
thrash. Man.
Oh, no, you can pick any metal band. Like, that opens up your options, but then you have to pick a reason as to why. Ooh, you have to give reasons, and we're going to get hate mail and death threats.
Hey, yeah, if you're doing Slayer, the Slayer fans are going to go Third Reich on my ass.
This is a tough one, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's no disrespect. This is just who we think is absolutely overall more talented. So you know what? Since we're going with Slayer, let's go pure thrash. It's got to be a thrash metal band. New or old, doesn't matter. Who's better than Slayer? You could even take the cut. Just throw whatever, Ethan. I'll either back you or I'll let you drown. I don't know.
Alright, crap. It's tough because, oh, fuck.
I'll tell you what, I'll throw you a bone. I will support you no matter who you pick. Just as long as it's not Blaze Bailey or King Diamond, they suck.
I'm gonna do Iced Earth.
Oh, alright! I totally back you on this one. Alright. Now let's give reasons as to why they are better than Slayer.
My big reason. When you stay the same, like Slayer's done, like I could predict what the next album of Slayer is going to consist of.
Oh, yeah.
Track one, War. Track two, Death. Track three, Blood. Track four, something with the title Blood in it. Track five, something about the Holocaust. Track six, something about some mad dude in history that killed people. Track seven, some ballad that's actually not a ballad because it's still really fast. Track eight...
Something about a demon.
Yeah, they just... Oh, track nine, something about hate and religion in general. They don't venture outside the box. All their songs sound the same. They consist of... You know, like, they just don't change, whereas Iced Earth, at least there's a consistent... There's some changing over their albums a little bit.
There's a consistency, but they leave windows open.
Right. They show that they're more musically talented in other areas besides just the whole going and playing fast. Slayer is into the point where they're in a mold and they have to play as fast as they possibly can, or they have to chug open notes out so much that they don't change. And in the end, I just don't think they show their talent enough.
Okay, and now...
You can play fast solos and you can play fast rhythm all day, but if you don't know how to do a slow song, you're not talented because you can't play anything else.
Alright, and now I know I'm going to get shit for this one. And I'll even say, you take Kerry King, as talented as Kerry King is at guitar, John Schaefer would beat the fucking brakes off of him in a guitar battle any day of the week.
Well, not to mention, John Schaefer has also made another band besides Iced Earth.
Yes, Demons and Wizards, we try not to talk about that, but that's okay.
Sons of Liberty?
Oh, Sons of Liberty as well, yes. But just overall, Iced Earth is more talented. Their message in their music is a lot better, and they show that they, you know, they're a powerhouse, man. They got a lot of staying power.
With talent comes evolution, and Slayer just doesn't show enough evolution to me.
Right.
They're talented in their genre. They're not talented overall.
Exactly, and so, you know, that's just how that's the way the cookie crumbles, folks. There are bands out there that are and to Slayer fans, I try not to stereotype and, you know, discriminate on any of you, but
you're probably gonna kill me.
You know, Slayer is Slayer, and that's good for you. You have fun and enjoy. But when you say when you start bringing up like who's more talented, that's when there's a problem. And you can't really make an argument for Slayer being overall talented than other bands when other bands are out there making waves with different adversities and venturing out with their music. Now, I will give it to Slayer on the consistency's sake. Wow, they stuck to their guns.
Right.
Didn't budge. Never have. Love that about them. And don't get me wrong, there's times when I need to put in a Slayer album because I just feel that much fucking hate in my heart right now. You know, like, I accidentally fell into the lake of hate and then came out and I needed to hear a Slayer album. You know? Like, Bray Wyatt, he listens to Slayer a lot. He has to listen to Slayer a lot.
Right.
So, the overall talent, better band, Iced Earth, obviously. And those are our reasons. What are your reasons for liking Iced Earth? Or, what are your reasons for thinking that Slayer's better? Hit us up with the twit. With the tweets? I almost said twits. That would have been bad. But yeah, this week's throwdown. We're going to flat out. The Turbo Flash Show says Iced Earth is better and more talented than Slayer.
Speaking of Iced Earth, I just realized, dude, back in April, Iced Earth provided an update on their website I just now got to.
Oh, really? Share
it
with
us. They are in the process of writing a new album that's titled The Judas Goat.
Uh-oh, The Judas Goat.
It should be out early 2016. Okay, then.
Well, now we got something to look forward to.
Okay, all right. Well, you go, John Schaefer.
But, yeah, but I got to tell you. Okay, now one thing I will say about the weak side of Iced Earth is they've never been a cohesive unit. Constant lineup changes, shifting through talent, as to where Slayer...
Stu's lasted this long.
Yeah. As to where John Schaefer's always had to go out and find new talent, which, don't get me wrong, within doing that has been good, and he's stayed consistent with his work within Iced Earth, but then that shows he's a very hard individual to work with, and I understand why, but now you're experiencing the same thing with Slayer, but it's only just now happening. Like, they just got rid of Dave Lombardo only a little while ago, and they have a new drummer and a new album that's out now. And they're pressing on, and they still sound like Slayer, so, you know what to expect. Iced Earth, I don't know what to expect, which is part of the thrill.
Well, now that Kerry King's pretty much doing all the songwriting, it's gonna sound even more the same, I think.
Yep. And I also gotta be honest with you on there, I do think that, John Schaefer could easily do better lead than Kerry King. Any day of the week. And he doesn't do lead that often. And that, again, that's not saying that Kerry King does not know his shit, but I just think band for band, when you think of like mascot, marketing, live performance, and everything else, I think Iced Earth is a much better package deal than Slayer, so gotta go with Iced Earth.
Speaking of which, their new album comes out next week.
Slayer?
Yep.
What is it titled?
Repentless.
Oh, yeah.
And the album cover looks exactly like it should look.
Is there blood on it?
Yes, and it looks like Jesus is crying.
Oh, man. All right. You know what? And on that note, I've got to say it's been a blast with you today, Ethan. The Turbo Lover.
It was fun.
It was good. We had a good show today. You know, like I said, we're looking to get the Twitter fans and everybody else more involved, so we will be adding and trying out different things with the show as we go on. But for today, I gotta say, it was a solid foundation. We talked about everything that we wanted to, and I can't wait for the next one. And I also can't wait for your next solo show. When is your next podcast episode coming out?
I don't know. I don't know.
You see, that's not good, because I need another episode.
Well, I do have some more stuff to talk about, so maybe next week at some point.
Absolutely. Talk about that shit, Ethan. Talk about it, damn it. Now, I don't want to hear a podcast with you doing Dr. Dre stuff, because that was a little weird.
No, I'll leave that all up to Steph for that.
Okay, yeah. Tell Steph to do a podcast about Dr. Dre. That would be great. Do you have any quick shout-outs there, Ethan? Anybody on the Twitter you would like to blow up and give the spotlight?
Let's see. Got, give a shout-out to Cody Watkins from Pod is War.
Ah, Codizzle!
Yeah. Hopefully he hears this. And then, of course, Brandon.
Yes, good old Brandon McIntyre, Brandon at NAI.
And then also, if you have not checked it out yet, go watch Pauly's Simple Life show. The season finale will be getting posted soon, which features the return of your favorite character, Fucksy Sal.
Oh, God. Really?
Yep.
Oh, I can't wait for that. I got to catch that on YouTube channel. Where can we find that at?
It is on, if you go under, I think it's YouTube. Just type under the search bar, The Simple Life, S-Y-M-P-E-L. And it should pop up under Paul Colvin.
All right. So we can find that show on YouTube. Oh, another shout-out that I think we got to give props to. This lady has been talking to both of us on Twitter, mostly on Monday nights, but she's all around a good person. That is the Queen Heel herself, Lee Morgan, on Twitter. You can find her at The Queen Heel. Awesome person, very nice lady, totally metal to the core, because she posted a picture of her. She works, you know, she has a job and all that good stuff. Like, she does stuff. She wears Iron Maiden t-shirts. It was cool. She has blue hair, or a blue stripe in her hair. Yeah, Lee Morgan, everybody, so she's cool. And then, of course, in closet metalhead, Liam Stryker. Guy, I can never not say anything good about that guy. Yeah, at NAI Liam. Liam NAI. You can find him on Twitter. And our good buddy Bill Neville on Twitter. At Bill Neville on Twitter. Awesome producer for the New Age Insiders. Always a blast to hang with them and tweet with them on Monday nights. And it's nice to hear when they discuss metal, because they actually brought up Metallica in their last podcast, which pretty much, that's what actually inspired me to attack Zane Anger.
Oh, okay.
So it was their fault. That's why I put you on the spot, was because of them.
Of course, now I gotta go blame them.
Yeah, so you were put in the hot seat because of them. So.
Yay.
But yeah, so give me a follow at the Flashcast Show. And shoot me an email of what your feedback was on podomatic.com. Also find me and subscribe on iTunes. Type in The Flashcast Show into your keyword search for shows on podcasts, and you will find me. And again, this was awesome. Thank you. But this has been an awesome Turbo Flash show. And I gotta say, keep banging your head. And we are gone. No!